Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Adrian Davis, and I'm your chief flight attendant. On behalf of Captain Bill Watson and the entire crew, welcome aboard CGI Airlines flight number 3398, nonstop service from Medina, Ohio to Jerusalem. Our flight time will be 10 hours and 45 minutes. We'll be flying at an altitude of 36,000 feet and a ground speed of 500 miles per hour. At this time, please ensure your seat backs and tables are in their full upright position and that your seat belt is correctly fastened. Also, portable electronic devices must be set to airplane mode until an announcement is made upon arrival. Thank you. Now, just before takeoff, you'll hear the pilot. Flight attendants, cabin crew, doors on automatic, cross-check, and report. Thank you. But before he says that, you'll hear something like this. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to direct your attention to the television monitors. We'll be showing our safety demonstration and would like the next few minutes of your complete attention, at which point nobody pays attention. No one. I don't know why. Perhaps it's because they've heard it so many times before, or maybe it's because of a statement they say in the safety demonstration, which is, in the unlikely event of an emergency. So people think it's unlikely, no need to pay attention. And yet the flight crew, their value is not in serving orange juice and coffee. Their value is in knowing what to do in the event of an emergency. They train hours and hours precisely what to do. And by giving us the instructions ahead of time, what they're hoping they will do is open up the neural pathways in our mind so that when we're flooded with adrenaline and we can't think straight, those pathways have already been opened in terms of what to do in an emergency. For the sermon today, I want to talk about how we must prepare in the likely event, in fact, in the most certain event of an upcoming emergency. And for this sermon, I require your complete attention. Paul tells us that in the last days, perilous times will come. But Jesus has not left us without instructions. He says he'll be with us until the end of the age. And he tells us exactly what we must do. Let's look at those instructions together. And I think as I unfold the sermon here, you'll see it ties in very much with what Pastor Watson was talking about in the announcements. Let's begin in Matthew 24. And in verse 4 of this chapter, Christ tells us how important it is not to be deceived. So the instructions that we are to receive, it's important that we don't receive the wrong instructions. He says, take heed that no man deceive you. This deception that Christ speaks of here is not generic. He doesn't mean don't be deceived generically. You know, you believe in the kingdom, make sure you don't believe that you're going to heaven. This is not what he's talking about. He's talking very specifically about the timing of his return and the events that precede his return. Don't be deceived about timing. Let's get the context beginning in chapter 23. And we'll break in at verse 34. Really, you should read the whole of chapter 3, which leads into chapter 24, all of chapter 23. But we'll break in at verse 34 to get the sense of it. He says to these scribes and Pharisees, therefore, behold, I send you prophets and wise men and scribes, and some of them you shall kill and crucify, and some of them you shall scourge in your synagogues and persecute them from city to city. That's what you're going to do. Then he says this, that upon you may come all the righteous blood shed upon the earth, from the blood of righteous Abel, the first victim of murder, unto the blood of Zechariah, son of Barachias, whom you slew between the temple and the altar. So that seems to be a murder that took place in their time. And Christ is saying, you're all of the blood of every righteous person that's been shed, is you're going to be held accountable for that. Truly I say unto you, all these things shall come upon this generation. O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, you that kill the prophets, and stone them which are sent unto you, how often I would have gathered your children together, even as a hen gathers her chickens under her wings, but you wouldn't have it. Behold, your house is left unto you desolate. This is a bold statement. These are people who are righteous. They're the leaders. Everybody's looking up to them. And Christ is saying, all of this will be desolate. And then he says, for I say unto you, you will not see me again until you shall say, blessed is he that comes in the name of the Lord. This now, in fact, I think it's a shame that there's a chapter break at verse 39. I think the chapter break should really be after verse 2 of chapter 24. Because when they break it at 39, we come into chapter 24 and we forget everything that's in chapter 23. And we have to keep the train of thought. So he says here in verse 1 of 24, and Jesus went out and departed from the temple, and his disciples came to him to show him the buildings of the temple. It's like, surely there's something good left. Christ is completely condemning Jerusalem. And so they come to show him the temple. And Jesus said unto them, do you not see all these things? Truly I say unto you, when I say that your house is left unto you desolate, that's what I mean. So you can look at the temple, and I'm telling you, there shall not be left here one stone upon another that shall not be thrown down. The disciples were so stunned by this teaching. Like, what are you saying? That they then ask him in verse 3, he says, and he sat upon the Mount of Olives, and the disciples came to him privately, we could say shocked, stunned, perplexed, saying, tell us. And they ask him three questions. When shall these things be? Timing. What shall be the sign of your coming? Timing. And of the end of the world? Timing. So they had three questions for him about the timing of these things. They were so shocked, so stunned. Well, when is all of this going to take place? And Jesus answered and said unto them, take heed that no man deceive you. I'm going to answer your three questions about timing. Make sure you're not deceived about the timing of these things. In verse 6, he begins to answer the question by not answering the question. So they say, like, what's the timing of these things? And he answers, I'm going to tell you what the timing is not. So don't be deceived. And he does answer the three questions, and I'm not going to cover that today, but if you read the passage, you'll see he answers all three questions. But he begins by saying, this is not the answer. And he says in verse 6, you're going to hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you're not troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but this is not the end. This is not the timing. It appears that Satan wants us to get the timing wrong. Satan wants us to get excited about false timing so that he can exhaust us. And we lose our enthusiasm. And we begin to disbelieve in the return of Christ. There was a war hero called General James Stockdale. I don't know if anybody's heard of him. The Vietnam War. General Stockdale. They've come up with something called the Stockdale Principle. And it has to do with patience. He was shot down from a plane in Vietnam. In that process, he broke his back. He was captured and became a prisoner of war. And because he was in a leadership position, the other prisoners of war would look to him. And so once the Vietnamese realized this, they tortured him. And they tortured him. And they wanted to make an example of him. And the prisoners of war were all very hopeful that they would not be left there to suffer and die, and that their fellow Americans would come and save them. And so as they saw the holidays approaching, they were convinced, Thanksgiving is around the corner. There's no way they'll leave us here for Thanksgiving. And then Thanksgiving would come, and Thanksgiving would go. And they were still there being tortured. Christmas is coming. There's no way they'll leave us here for Christmas. And so it would go from holiday to holiday. It went on for 7.5 years. And General Stockdale kept telling them, don't count on it. And he would give them rules around the torture. If they torture you this much, you can give this much information. If they torture you this much, you can give this much information. But he told them, never lose hope that we will be rescued, just not on your timing. He said, those prisoners of war that died, he said they died of a broken heart. They were overly optimistic. And when their optimism was crushed, they gave up. He was a realist. And he went on to survive and come back to America and live a very fulfilled life. Satan wants us discouraged. When we see hurricanes, wars, rumors of wars, false prophets are going to try to get us excited. This is it, this is it. Christ actually began by saying, that's not it. Buckle up. Be prepared for a long haul. But he does give what the answers are. So we need to realize that timing matters and looking for the right signs matter. But there's something else that he gives us to help us avoid deception. And that other thing is called the good man of the house. Let's look at that. In verse 32, again regarding timing, he says, now in fact the whole passage is about timing, but here in verse 32 he says, now learn a parable of the fig tree. When his branch is yet tender and puts forth leaves, you know that summer is near. So likewise you, when you shall see all these things, know that it is near, even at the doors. It's not here yet, but these things that are not the signs, when you actually see them, you know that it's near. It's at the doors. Truly I say unto you, this generation shall not pass till all these things be fulfilled. And in fact, this is the answer to their first question. When they said, when shall all these things be? The answer is, they'll all be within the single generation. And although we're now 2,000 years later, the same way he said to the scribes and Pharisees that he spoke to at the time, that you're like your fathers who murdered the prophets, and that you have shown yourself to be just like them. Therefore, upon you is all the righteous blood shed. In the same way, 2,000 years later, the generation that this shall come upon, they also have the same DNA as their fathers. And Christ holds them accountable for all the blood that was shed. And so they will be punished, and Jerusalem will be desolate upon that generation. Here in verse 30 of Matthew 23, let's go back there to see that. They say here in verse 30, again, he's speaking to the religious leaders. Verse 30, and you say, if we had been in the days of our fathers, we would not have been partakers with them in the blood of the prophets. So they're claiming innocence, that if we had lived in the time of the prophets, we wouldn't have done that. But then Christ says, therefore, you are witnesses unto yourselves that you are the children of them which kill the prophets. Fill you up then the measure of your fathers. You serpents, you generation of vipers, how can you escape the damnation of hell? So he says to them, fill you up then the measure of your fathers. And later he says, I'm going to send you prophets, I'm going to send you teachers, I'm going to send you scribes, and you're going to murder them. You're just like your fathers. And so the generation in the end time will have the same DNA. He says here in verse 34, therefore behold, I send you, the children of the murderers, I'm sending you prophets and wise men and scribes. And some of them you shall kill and crucify. And some of them you shall scourge in your synagogues and persecute from city to city, that upon you may come all of the righteous blood that was shed. So you're the same as your fathers. And then he says in verse 36, verily I say unto you, all these things shall come upon this generation. So here we want to take this verse 36, that all of this tragedy will come upon this generation, and go back to Matthew 24 and verse 33, where he says, so likewise you, when you see all these things, know that it is near, even at the doors. Verily I say unto you, this generation shall not pass till all these things be fulfilled. So it's all going to come upon the children of murderers who are themselves murderers. And they are going to have the brunt of all of the blood that was shed from the righteous men from Abel. In verse 36 he says, but of that day and hour, in fact verse 35 is important, heaven and earth shall pass away, but my word shall not pass away. So there's going to be a new heavens and a new earth, but everything that Christ has spoken through all the prophets and directly, none of it will fail. So this is our anchor. This is what we hold on to through the times ahead. It's the words of the Lord. This is what will not fail. Everything else will fail. God's words will not fail. But of that day and hour knows no man, no, not the angels of heaven, but my Father only. So we cannot know the exact time of his return. But then he says this, but as the days of Noah were, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. So there's something we can learn from what happened in Noah's time. He says, for as in the days that were before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage until the day Noah entered into the ark. And they didn't know until the flood came and took them all away, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. In the context of chapter 23, unlike the days of Noah, where it was the wicked in general, in the context of chapter 23, the wicked here are the Jews, the Jewish leadership, upon whom all of this tragedy that Jerusalem will be left desolate. So these people that he just pronounced, upon your house will be left desolate, he's saying they will have no idea when it's coming. It's going to catch them off guard. So he says, for as in the days of Noah that were before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered into the ark. It's not that there's anything wrong with eating and drinking or marrying and giving in marriage. It's just business as usual. They're just going about business as usual. They have no idea what's coming until the flood actually came. So in verse 42, he says to his disciples, who are going to be the leaders of the church he's building, watch therefore. You watch, because you do not know what hour your Lord does come. But know this, that if the good man of the house had known in what watch the thief would come, he would have watched. The thief is Christ, the house is the church, and there's a good man of the house. If the good man of the house, so you must watch, you disciples. The Jews that are going to be condemned have no idea what's coming. They won't know until it's upon them, but you must watch. But know this. So you can't know when I'm coming exactly, but know this. If the good man of the house had known in what watch the thief would come, he would have watched and would not have suffered his house to be broken up. So we have to understand that the return of Christ here, the appearing of the Lord, doesn't mean the moment he lands on earth. It's a package. Everything that precedes his arrival is part of his arrival. It's part of his appearing. So the tribulation period that immediately precedes his return is part of his appearing. And it's referred to as the thief. That it's going to come upon these people suddenly. They have no idea. It's, you know, in Noah's day, he was warning them. He was building the ark, and business as usual, until he stepped into the ark and closed the door, and the floods came, and then they were just totally caught off guard. These people whose house is going to be made desolate, that is Jerusalem, who are cursed under the covenant for breaking the covenant, they have no idea what's coming. The thief is going to break up the house. But then Christ says to his disciples, as the good men of the house, that is the head of the households that will be assigned to them, that if they had known, if the good men of the house had known when the thief was going to break in, he wouldn't have allowed his house to be broken up. So the church also is under pressure from the appearing of the Lord. And everything that happens during that tribulation period and before it could break up the household. But Christ assigns a good man of the house. This is a congregational family. There's a good man of the house that has to watch to ensure that the household is not broken up. That prior to his arrival, brother will betray brother. Prior to his arrival, the agape, the spiritual love of the household will grow cold. If the responsibility of the good man of the house is to keep the house unified. And so Pastor Watson was up here talking about what's happening in the world, things that are unfolding, watching, and talking about keeping our unity and not allowing these false ideas to creep in that will drive a wedge between us. This is the responsibility of the good men of the house. So he says, and let's just see what Christ means by good men of the house. If you hold your place in chapter 24, and just go to chapter 20. And we'll just break into this parable where he uses the term good man of the house. In chapter 20 and verse 8, so this is the laborers that everyone agrees for a penny to work. So when evening was come, the lord of the vineyard said unto his steward, call the laborers and give them their hire, beginning from the last unto the first. So he doesn't begin with the first. He keeps the first there so they can see what everybody else was paid. And when they came that were hired about the 11th hour, they received every man a penny. But when the first came, they supposed that they should have received more. And they likewise received every man a penny. And when they had received it, they murmured against the good man of the house. So the good man of the house isn't everybody. The good man of the house isn't the whole household. The good man of the house is the head of the household. Back to Matthew 24. And verse 44, where he's now speaking to his disciples who are going to take this role of the good man of the house in his absence. And in verse 44 he says, therefore be you also ready, for in such an hour as you think not, the Son of Man comes. Who then is a faithful and wise servant? Speaking again to those who are going to take this role of good men of the house. Who then is a faithful and wise servant whom his Lord has made ruler over his household? So the Lord has a household, but he takes some servants to make them ruler over the household. Why? To give them meat in due season. So that is the function of the good man of the house, to give meat in due season, which also implies that as the season changes, the meat changes. And the meat doesn't come from the good men of the house. The meat comes from Christ. It's his words that will never fail. But the words are hidden. In fact, quickly come with me to Matthew 13. We'll come back to Matthew 24. The meat must be in due season. As the seasons change, as we get closer to the end, the meat must also change. But the good men of the house doesn't produce the meat. Christ is the source of the meat. He gives it to the good men of the house to give to the household. Paul said, follow me as I follow Christ. We don't just follow Paul, we follow him as he follows Christ. We don't want men's words. We want Christ's words. Here in Matthew 13 and verse 52, speaking of the good man of the house, he says, then he said he unto them, therefore every scribe which is instructed unto the kingdom of heaven is like unto a man that is a good man of the house, a householder, which brings forth out of his treasure things new and old. So we can't just be bringing same old, and the seasons are changing. As the seasons are changing, we have to be skilled in the word to bring out that part of the word that's appropriate for the season. That again, we have to be watching. And as we see the world around us changing, and we have no idea, right? It's it's like when a boat is, they put a knot to keep the boat anchored to the shore. And when you take off those ropes and throw the ropes into the boat's no longer anchored to the shore. Well, our society is no longer anchored to the shore. We have uprooted it from its Christian roots. Who knows where we're going? Who knows what's going to replace it? Who knows what tomorrow is going to look like? But as it all changes, and as we watch, different scriptures are going to come to light. It's like a time-released capsule. That there are scriptures right in front of us that don't mean anything to us today. But tomorrow, when the world changes, those scriptures are going to leap off the page. And so Christ says that the good man of the house brings forth out of his treasure things new and old. Back to Matthew 24. He says, verse 45, who then is a faithful and wise servant? So the implication is not everybody will be. Christ is looking for who's going to do this, whom his Lord has made ruler over his household, to give the household meat in due season. Blessed is that servant whom his Lord, when he comes, shall find so doing. So when the floods came in Noah's day, Noah was found doing exactly what God commanded him to do. And we're going to get through, and Noah then gave birth to the new civilization. We're going to give birth to new civilization if we do the things that Christ instructs us to do. Verily I say unto you that he shall make him ruler over all his goods, but, and if, that evil servant shall say in his heart, my Lord delays his coming. So the good man of the house, his Lord is Jesus, but now he's deceived about timing. He didn't listen to what Christ said. Don't get confused about timing. He got all excited. There was a hurricane. There was an earthquake. There was war. There was rumor. Surely it's just around the corner. Got all excited. Got disappointed. Then there was another hurricane and another earthquake and a tsunami and another war and more. And he got all excited again. And then he got discouraged. And then finally he just, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen in my lifetime. And then what happens? He says, my Lord delays his coming and shall begin to smite his fellow servants. The love grows cold. And to eat and drink with the drunken. So going along now with those who have no idea, the Lord of that servant shall come in a day when he looks not for him and in an hour that he is not aware of, and shall cut him asunder, and listen to this, and appoint him his portion with who? With the hypocrites. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Who are the hypocrites? What does Christ mean that the good man of the house will now be included with the hypocrites? Let's go back to Matthew 23. This is all one passage, Matthew 23. Let's just break in at verse 27. In fact, I would suggest on your own time, just count the number of times Christ talks about the hypocrites in Matthew 23. But here in verse 27, he says, woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For you are like unto whited sepulchres, which indeed appear beautiful outward, but are within full of dead men's bones and of all uncleanness. So he just pronounced that Jerusalem will be desolate. And it will be desolate because of these hypocrites. But he has his disciples whose eyes are opened, whose ears are opened, who have going to receive the Holy Spirit to be in leadership role. But he says, if you get deceived about this timing, you're going to be included with these hypocrites whose house is going to be made desolate. We have to follow his instructions and not be deceived and do the things that he tells us to do to get through this emergency. You know, I fly a lot, and God be praised, never had any issue. Takeoff and landing are the two most dangerous parts of a flight. Once you're airborne, it's fine. But takeoff and landing, you're fighting gravity. And the one time when I was really, like, scared, my knuckles were white, and my heart was in my throat. We were flying from Toronto to Ottawa in the middle of winter, Toronto was fine, but Ottawa was in the middle of a storm. And there was like, I won't say zero visibility, but very little visibility, and lots of wind. And the pilot was landing, and sometimes when they land, they turn the plane on its side to fight the wind. And then at the last minute, they'll correct it so they can land. Well, I didn't know about that, correcting it at the last minute. I'm just watching them landing this thing sideways. And then he tried to correct it, and he couldn't land. He picked up the plane again, so he took off again, circled, and then he said this over the loudspeaker, "Let's try that again." And he didn't sound very confident. It was like, "Let's try that again." Fortunately, we landed. I'm here. This was several years ago. But, you know, he had instructions as to what to do in an emergency and how to land the plane safely. And Christ gives us these instructions. The question is, are we going to be like Noah, do the things that are commanded to get through the storm and come out on the other side to give birth to a new civilization, or are we going to do our own thing? So, what does Christ give us? How does he give us this meat in due season? Let's go to Ephesians 4. Ephesians 4, where we see what Christ gives us in order to give us meat in due season is church structure. There is a structure that he gives that works so that we can have meat in due season. Here in Ephesians 4, beginning in verse 8, he says, "Therefore he says, when he ascended up on high, he led captivity captive." So he's going to destroy slavery. "And gave gifts unto men." What are these gifts that he gave us? Verse 11. These gifts. "And he gave some apostles, and some prophets, and some evangelists, and some pastors and teachers." And that pastors and teachers is a unit. Why did he do this? "For the perfecting of the saints, for the work of the ministry, for the edifying," or the building up, "of the body of Christ." So as we move closer and closer to the end, as society unravels around us, as evil men wax worse and worse, as the risk of betrayal increases, what Christ says here is these apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, and teachers are going to be perfecting the saints, are going to be building up the body of Christ. So as we get closer to his return, the body is becoming more and more mature. The body is becoming cleaner, more robust, ready for his arrival. So God gives us everything that we need. He says here in verse 13, so it's for the building up of the body of Christ, "until we all come in the unity of the faith." And Pastor Watson was up here talking about holding on to the unity, very much seeing the need for us to be unified. So we're going to have this until we all come in the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God unto a perfect man. So evil men are waxing worse and worse, having more and more influence. Society is unraveling. And yet the church is coming unto a perfect man, unto the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ. And notice that this is, it's bottom up. It's not top down. Christ is the foundation. The prophets and apostles are next. Pastors and teachers and evangelists are speaking from the foundation. You're not interested in men's words. You're interested in the words of the Lord. And the function of pastors and teachers is to give you the words of the Lord. And your job then is to search the scriptures to see if these things are so. And the moment a man gets up to give you his opinion, you're not interested. Give us the word of the Lord. Give us meat in due season. Because this is what's going to perfect us. And verse 14, "that we henceforth be no more children tossed to and fro and carried about with every wind of doctrine." And there's going to be every wind of doctrine, every ideology possible. And it's all designed by Satan to unseat us, to unravel us. Notice this. It's by the sleight of men and cunning craftiness. They're really thinking about this. whereby they lie in wait to deceive. They're not necessarily going to strike right away, but they're scheming and they know their timing. Let's go back to Matthew 24. And so this is the foundation. Christ says that the foolish man builds his house upon the sand. The wise man builds it upon the rock. We can build it upon the rock, which is the words of the Lord, which will never fail. So the good man of the house is to give us the words that will never fail. Here in verse 8, we see this emergency situation that's going to come upon us. In answering the question about the timing, the three questions they asked, he begins by saying, these signs that I'm giving you, verse 8, all these are the beginning of sorrows. So don't think, oh, Thanksgiving's around the corner, he'll definitely rescue us then. No, buckle up. When you start to see these things, earthquakes, hurricanes, wars, rumors of wars, pestilences, buckle up. Could be another 7.5 years, could be another 70 years. All of these are just the indicators to say the end is coming, that the fig tree is showing its leaves. The end is going to come suddenly. The tribulation will come upon us suddenly. But prior to it, we're going to see these things that are, he says, then at this time shall they deliver you up to be afflicted and shall kill you. Notice they'll kill you. And you shall be hated of all nations for my name's sake. And then at this time shall many be offended. How dare them let Thanksgiving come and go and not rescue us? How dare them let Christmas, because that's an important holiday, then Easter, you know? Surely they're not going to keep us here for Father's Day. And these holidays would come and go year after year, and they just gave up. They became offended. Christ tells us everything that's going to happen, that if we study his word, we should not be offended. In fact, when people are coming to the conclusion that God is unfaithful, look what's happened to Jerusalem. How could God be with the Jews if this is happening in Jerusalem? How can you call God your God when he's allowed this to happen to your church? Just when all of this happens and people are concluding that God is unfaithful, we're actually coming to the conclusion that God is totally faithful. Everything that he says happens exactly as he says it. But we have to be aware of what he says. They shall kill you and you shall be hated of all nations for my name's sake. And then shall many be offended. And when they're offended, what will they do? And shall betray one another and shall hate one another. So the household has been broken up. The good man of the house wasn't doing his job, allowed these false ideas to get into the household, break up the household, and now many are betraying one another and hating one another. And many false prophets shall rise and shall deceive many. And because iniquity shall abound, the agape love of many shall wax cold. But he that shall endure unto the end, the same shall be saved. And a big part of this endurance will come from our spiritual nutrition. If we think we can eat cotton candy and compete in the Olympics, it just doesn't work. We've got to be nourished. We need good protein. We need a balanced diet. And so we need to be looking for the words of God, and the good man of the house needs to bring all of that to us. You know, when an aircraft finally lands and taxis to the gate, you'll usually hear something along the lines, "Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Zion, the city of God." Local time is 12:22 p.m., and the temperature is 24 degrees Celsius. I know you guys don't do Celsius here, do you? I need a translation for America. I tried. I did miles. I did, right? Yeah. Look at 1 Thessalonians 5 for our final scripture. 1 Thessalonians 5. Let's tie all this together with the Apostle Paul giving us meat in due season. here in 1 Thessalonians 5, and we'll pick it up in verse 1. But of the times and the seasons, it's about timing. Of the times and the seasons, brethren, you have no need that I write unto you. For you yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord so comes as a thief in the night. So it's not that the Lord is going to come as a thief in the night. It's the day of the Lord. Everything that precedes his arrival, the whole package is going to come as a thief in the night. And the whole package is going to catch many off guard. But you yourselves know perfectly that it comes as a thief in the night. For when they shall say, peace and safety. So when there's war and rumors of war, when there's earthquakes and hurricanes, when there's famine and pestilence, everybody's excited. And surely it's going to happen now. But when there's peace and safety, everyone relaxes. And the apostle says, we should know that when they shall say, peace and safety, then sudden destruction. This is the thief in the night. Sudden destruction comes upon them, as travail upon a woman with child, and they shall not escape. But you, brethren, are not in darkness, that that day should overtake you as a thief. You are all the children of light and the children of the day. We are not of the night, nor of darkness. Therefore, let us not sleep as do others, but let us watch and be sober. For they that sleep, sleep in the night, and they that be drunken are drunken in the night. Verse 11. Therefore, comfort yourselves together and edify one another, even as you also do. And we're begging you, brethren, we're begging you, as we enter this period of the end, the final days, we're begging you, brethren, to know them which labor among you and are over you in the Lord. Know the good man of the house. And we're begging you to know the good man of the house, whom the Lord has put over you, which labor among you, and are over you in the Lord, and admonish you, and esteem them very highly in love for their work's sake. The work is to keep the body united, keep the body nourished, and be at peace among yourselves. Now we exhort you, brethren, warn them that are unruly, comfort the feeble-minded, support the weak, be patient toward all men. For your safety and comfort, please remain seated with your seatbelt fastened until the captain turns off the fastened seatbelt sign. This will indicate that we have parked at the gate and that it is safe for you to move about. At this time, you may use your cellular phones if you wish. Please check around your seat for any personal belongings you may have brought on board with you, and please use caution when opening the overhead bins, as heavy articles may have shifted around during the flight. If you require deplaning assistance, please remain in your seat until all other passengers have deplaned. One of our crew members will then be pleased to assist you. On behalf of CGI Airlines, Captain Watson, and the entire crew, I'd like to thank you for joining us on this trip, and we are looking forward to seeing you on board again in the near future. Brethren, we can all land safely if we follow the words of the Lord of what to do in the likely event of an emergency.